There's no break.
Hello, everybody. Really happy to be here. My name is Joseph Goldberg, and I'm going to talk about performance and how you can tune up and make those silhouette applications even faster. I'm going to start and talk about runtime performance and startup performance, and then Mike is going to come up a little bit later. He's going to talk about memory and some other tools that will be available for you to even tune your application even more. So we are in the silhouette performance team, and we often get approached by customers who are coming with a performance and that ask, hey, my application is not started, is not performing well, what did they do wrong? So what we did notice is that projects that start early with performance in mind from the beginning typically are more successful. So I really encourage you to start with performance early. Pick up your key scenarios, set goals for those, and start measure early and soon. As often, and make it part of your regular check-in process. Is it weekly, monthly, milestone, whatever? Just plan for it in advance. And as you add more features, check how it impacts performance. Is performance going any worse? What happened? What did the check-in do? And this is basically what we do here in Microsoft and other teams in Microsoft. That's how we operate. And when you're done, make sure you test your final product in a real environment, whether it's if you customers using netbooks, test on netbooks. If customer using on a network which have low speed and a lot of latency, check on those networks as well. So I'm going to talk about startup performance, and here are the key sequence when serverless application starts. First, IE passes the HTML and loads Silverlight, and then Silverlight download your ZAP, and then the ZAP gets unzipped by Silverlight, and CLR get loaded. Then the parser get passing the XAML and instantiates all the XAML objects. And then the apps get jitted by the CLR, apps load, and then renders. So there are a few areas where you can actually improve this sequence and make Silverlight do its job even better. The first one you can do by reducing the size of your ZAP. If you break your ZAP into smaller pieces and make the first ZAP as small as possible, you just have the code that you need just to bring up your first first screen, it'll make your application start faster. And then, of course, you can load other ZAP or other modules that you need dynamically. Another approach to reduce the ZAP size is basically use a little better compression. So the ZAP basically is a zip file, and it does a pretty good job on compressing and compression. But there are better compressors out there, and if you really need, if your application is really big or your network speed is really slow, consider using other compressors such as 7-zip, for example. It's much it's more efficient. Another area we can improve is basically simplifying your XAML. Remove all the dead XAMLs that you may have gotten from your designer, and it's part of your code, but it's not really called anywhere. You don't need to carry it with you. It doesn't need to get passed. So you want to reduce the pass time. For example, if you have properties which are, by default, are the same properties, you don't need to set them. For example, you don't need to set visibility equal visible because it's already visually visible. Or opacity equal one, it's already there. Another area is you want to postpone initializations that you really don't need at startup time. Postpone them to later. The most important thing, just bring up your first page as fast as possible. Another thing is you have to remember that, especially the cold start, disk I/O takes a big part of the whole process. So you have basically three components taking place here. You have the download from the network, you have your disk access, and then you have the CPU to do JIT and stuff like that. So all these are kind of actions that are taking place. If you can combine or make them as concurrent as possible, it will speed up your application. And there are a few tools that can help you figure this out, such as XPerf, or VRTA, which is a visual round-trip analyzer, or tools like Fiddler that can tell you what's going on the wire. And the first component is a splash screen that just talked about it a little bit earlier. Basically, put a smaller piece of code in front of the user, and there's a perception, basically, that the app starts faster. And it's a great way of, easy way to make it seems faster. So when you talk about dynamic download, think about application. Maybe you have a sales application which displays a data grid, right? But the first screen of the application is a login page. So you don't really need a data grid. Why load it together with the application? It just takes more time. The thing is, with Data Grid, it's not part of the core Silverlight controls. It's actually part of the SDK. So your application needs to download every single time or on call start, you need to download from the net. So you can avoid it by dynamically downloading it. And in the Data Grid case, it's only 144 kilobytes, but think about if you have your own module, which is not really needed for startup, we can postpone it. And let me show a little bit of a code, example of how you can do it. So basically here, you see that I'm using an ASIC download using a web client API. Basically downloading the system.windows.controller.data.dll asynchronously. And when it finishes, there is the open read complete API callback is being called, and where we download, actually load the DLL into the domain. What you want to make sure is actually that you do this on a separate method when you actually use the Data Grid. Otherwise, the Data Grid is not really available in the on read complete function, because the CLR is just about to jit this method. So you want to make sure you put it on a different method and then decorate it with the no inlining attribute. Basically, you're telling the JIT, CLR JIT, do it later when you actually need this method. Let me switch to talk about runtime performance. And there are a few areas where you can kind of separate and look at runtime performance. First, and I'm going to touch on each and every one of those one by one. So obviously, the more you draw on the screen, the slower your application is going to get. Silverlight is a retained system, so it only draws what is dirty. However, if you have large animations that take, let's say, large portion of the screen and you animate those, Silverlight have to do more work to update those pixels. So if you don't have to, reduce those animations. Turn off hidden animations. Sometimes people, for example, leave animations running, and instead of just turning them off, they just put some other UI on top. And what is happening is that the animation continues to draw, and there's layout event, and there's even rendering work that Silverlight is doing, because it doesn't know that the layer on top may have opacity which is not one, so he may need to blend it. So we continue to animate underneath, so you want to avoid it. And beware of controls such as a progress bar that animate by default. If you have one control, it's not a huge issue, but if you have a lot of them, it becomes an issue. You have all those controls animating, the template animates by default, and it takes more work for Silverlight to make those updates. So how do you know if you have hidden animation on what's going on the screen? One critical flag that I encourage everybody to use is the enable redo regions. Basically, what it does, it flashes on the screen and tells you what is being rendered at every given frame. And you'll see an example, and I'm going to give more demo. You can enable it in the plugin level, or you can enable it in code. Another important flag is the frame rate counter. Basically, it enables on the bottom left of the browser, shows you what is the current frame rate and what is the maximum frame rate. I'm not going to touch much about the max frame rate. By default, it's 60, and I encourage everybody to leave it there. Again, you can do it in code or do it at the plugin level. What this does, it shows you what is the frame rate and kind of give indication if your animation may have slowed down because whatever reason, it tells you if you have some sort of a performance problem, if it's not 60. When the GPU acceleration is enabled, and I'm going to touch more about it, there's additional counters showing up of the screen, telling you again frame rate, how many kilobytes is allocated on the GPU, how many accelerated surfaces available on the GPU, and additional intermediate surfaces that the Silverlight allocates in order to do GPU work. Effects. So designers love to use effects. They put them everywhere, right? But they are costly. There's cost issues. There's CPU cost, there's memory cost. So I'm not saying don't use effects, use them, but just be careful and be know what you're doing. All effects are rendered in software. When I say effects, built-in effects, the blur and the drop shadow, but there's also custom shadow effects that you can write on your own, and those may be even more expensive. So just be aware of those. When you use effect, avoid any operations that may trigger re-rasterization. For example, don't animate properties of effects, because this will make the effect work every single frame. You don't want to apply effect on elements that animating. For example, if you do effect on some sort of a color, you know, you don't want to animate the color. And especially pay attention on effects that apply to a very large container. And make sure that there's no sub-children or sub-elements that animate, because what will happen, the entire container will update. The reason is that Silverlight doesn't know if you're applying some sort of a custom effect that may, like a mirror effect, that may take pixels from one side of the screen, put them on another side. So to be safe, it updates the entire screen every frame. I'm going to give you a demo to see what the impact is. You got a demo in here. So here you see the Book Club applications that we've seen earlier throughout the day. And I don't know if you see, but I have two buttons here. One is enable read origin, the flag that I mentioned earlier. You can zoom, I don't know if you can see. And I have another flag to just cause some sort of animation on the application title. So you think everything looks pretty solid, nothing going on the screen, right? But if you notice, there is a shader effect right here through around the border, right? So it's kind of very, very, very easy, not very easy to see. But if I enable the redraw region, you can see that as I move over elements that change, the entire screen gets updated, right? And even if I put my carrot on the textbook and I don't do anything, the entire screen updates just because of one little carrot. This was because of what I just told you earlier, right? But if you apply an effect on a container and you have animating children, the entire screen gets updated. And I have a little checkbox here that animates the application title and see what happens. The entire application gets updated every frame. And you can see the CPU is almost at 100. I have a four-core machine here, so it's almost at 100%. So to fix that, I have another version of the same app. And you can see, visually, the application is the same. Right? There's nothing, it looks exactly the same, but I'll show you how I fix it. And if I enable this, redo it, now I see the application behaves as expected. When I change the caret, nothing updates, just what needs to get updated. And when I animate the title, just the title updates as what you expect. Now if I go back to my PowerPoint, let me show you the piece of code that actually does it. So the application have, in the style, they applied on the content border, they applied a drop shadow effect. And the way I fixed that, I basically removed that, and instead I created another element, sibling element to the top border. So basically I have the original border with no effect now and a new border, sibling side by side, and I put the effect on this new border. There's a new border, I have no children, so there's nothing animating there. It's just a blank border with effect on it. And this kind of solved the problem, right? And visually, it's the same effect, nothing changed. Now let's talk about how you can accelerate things and make things faster using the GPU. So elements or sub-elements can be cached and via a bitmap cache, and just basically we put the bitmap cache on the GPU, and we allow the GPU to accelerate and use the bitmap as means to redraw. So basically, we took all the work from the CPU, moving into the GPU, and the bitmap lives on the GPU. Few properties can be accelerated via GPU, render transform, opacity, rectangular clips, and projection, and some others can. So if you do use this feature, make sure that you're using only those properties and not others. Otherwise, if you use other properties such as non-rectangular clips, opacity mask, and effect, you may fall back to software. To enable the GPU, at the plugin level, you set up this parameter, enable GPU acceleration. And this you have to do at the plugin level, so you kind of have to decide in advance whether I'm going to do it or not do it. On Mac, we only support full screen. On Windows, both full and non-full screen. Once you set the GPU acceleration flag, you can pick up the elements that you want to GPU accelerate, and you set a bitmap cache of type cache mode of type bitmap cache, that's the only actually cache mode that's available today, on those elements. So basically what happens, those elements are being converted into bitmap and put on the GPU. Now, in certain cases, you may want to control the scale or the size of it, especially for Zoom scenarios, and I'm going to show you a demo. You want to make sure that when people see this bitmap, it's not being, it's just as good as vectorgraphic, if you like. So, but when you do set this, and you set it via this rendered scale property, and you can set one is 100%, two is like 200%, and so on and so forth. And you can set even a value less than one, if you like, and I'm going to give you a demo. The larger the image, the more quality you see at the bitmap, right? However, there's a trade-off, as always, right? If the image is larger, it takes more memory of the GPU and gives you less memory to do other things. So you have to be just watch what you're doing and make sure that you're picking the right trade-off. So when to set it bitmap cache? So you want to set it on elements which are expensive, a lot of rich vector graphics. And they have some elements, properties that are animating, those properties that I mentioned earlier that still can be done on the GPU. And if those properties are animating, then it makes sense to kind of offload this work to the GPU. And as always, make sure you see impact on the application. Don't do it if no impact, right? But you have to be, as I said, there's a lot of trade-offs. You have to be careful on what to set it and what not to set it. For example, don't set it on too many large visuals. Otherwise, you allocate so much memory on the GPU, and you may run out of memory and you fall back into software, so you defeat the purpose. Also, don't set on sub-elements. If you don't set an element which have maybe children which animate, because otherwise this whole image have to be recreated every time. This bitmap have to be recreated every time. If you do have such animating children, then you may want to cache those first. So let me give you another demo of that. So I have a little cat application here. Basically, I can move it around. I can zoom in and out. I can move it left and right. I can set opacity animation. I can set perspective animation. And you can see that as I do this, the CPU is kind of high. It's almost at 100%. And if I enable this flag that I mentioned earlier, the enable read origin, you can see that it's updating as expected, right? I can also enable the frame rate counter. And because this application is, I set the GPU accelerated flag, now I can see these counters on, I hope you guys see that. You can see those counters on the top left of the browser, right? So now I can see that I'm rendering at 90 frames per second. I guess this monitor is really fast. So as I said, the CPU is really high. But however, I have this checkbox here that I can set bitmap cache on this cat, or this moving cat. And when I do that, you can see that now everything is running hardware. And I see my CPU drop to about less than 5, right? Significant, dramatically improved performance just by setting this bitmap cache. And you hardly notice any difference in the quality of the image, but this is a bitmap that's moving on the GPU and animating, right? And if you can see the read origin, nothing is being drawn by Silverlight. You see there's nothing. Let me just show it again. Let me disable that and see everything is drawn on the screen. And now when I turn this feature on, everything is just not drawn. It's just everything on the GPU. And the CPU goes to almost zero. So this is really a significant performance improvement, right, just by doing that. Stop this animation, for example, and you see now because this is an image. If I kind of zoom out, you see the quality of it is not so great because it's a bitmap really. And if I switch back to the original software rendering, let me disable that. It's clear because of the vector graphic, right? And again, if I go to the bitmap cache, the quality goes bad. So now because it's an image. And I can play down with the rendered scale property that I mentioned earlier, and I can go lower, and as you can see, the property is getting even worse. And you see the size on how much RAM is being allocated in the GPU. As I switch at the rendered scale value from 4 to 5 to 1, I'm allocating more RAM on the GPU because I'm allocating a larger scale bitmap on the GPU. And if I go higher, let's say to 4, you see I'm getting much better quality. So almost as good as Vertex graphics. And I can go higher, I never tried it on this machine, but actually it works. You know, I can go to 8. But at some point, I'm going to run out of memory if I allocate make rendered scale too big. Okay. So that's one demo I want to show. Another demo that I mentioned earlier about hitting animations. Another thing that I have here is I have a little rectangle so that I can cover the entire cat here. And I can continue animate, and you see the animation is kind of done behind this rectangle, right? I can go. Oops. It's behind this rectangle, right? And you think that there's no work to be done, but if I enable other animation and disable bitmap cache to show you the impact on CPU, you see there's a lot of CPU work being done, even though the animation is really almost completely hidden, right? So, but if you enable this redo region, you can see, oh, actually, Silverlight does a lot of work behind the scene in drawing this animation. Again, because we don't know whether the rectangle have any opacity or not, so we have to redraw. So there's a lot of layout work, events, and rendering work being done in order to still going on, even though the animation is pretty much covered. Okay, let's switch back to the point. Just disable it. Switch back to the PowerPoint. Let's talk about how to use the GPU. Let's talk about what else you can do in order to make your application perform a little better. So another thing is, I mentioned earlier, is reducing your XAML. You know, make it simple. The larger it is, the less performant your application going to be. You know, properties, layout, binding, input, heat testing, everything come with a cost. So the more elements you have, less cost for Silverlight to work. You know, if you don't need those elements, take them out of the tree. And also, if your tree is kind of flatter, events can traverse the tree much faster. There's a big difference. Your application uses 1,000 elements or 10,000 elements. It's going to be significant impact on performance. So know how many elements your application uses. There's some nice tools such as UI Spy that let you inspect your application tree and see how many elements you are using and what they are. Template expansion. Again, your designer may give you a very rich. You want to make sure that as your templates expand, they're not making your tree much fatter than it needs to. Also be aware when you use too many user controls, because user controls are instantiated, are repassed every single time you instantiate them. It's not a huge issue when you have one or a handful of user controls, but if you have hundreds or many of them, for example, think of a data grid scenario where each template, each cell may be its own user control, it can have an impact. So use templates instead. Unused subtests. Often we see developers have login or welcome dialog or any parts of the application, and instead of just removing them, they just put stuff on top. So those elements are still part of the tree and still participate in all the layout and events and et cetera. But let's say you just do the login to log in once to your application and you no longer need this login, just remove it from the tree. It doesn't need to be there, right? Otherwise, all this accumulate and impact your performance. If you have to keep those elements in the tree, use visibility equal collapse and don't use opacity equals zero. Opacity equals zero means that we still need to blend them and the layout and other events. With collapse, those elements don't participate in input, they're not rendered, etc. But you have to remember when you do collapse, those elements are still kept in memory, right? So there's still memory impact, although it's much better than opacity equals zero. So ideally, if you don't need those login screen welcome, just remove them from the tree. But if you have to, use collapsed. And virtualization. So virtualization basically allow Sybula to allocate memory, allocate elements for the ones that are actually shown. So for example, think of a data grid with 10,000 elements. Only the one that are shown on the screen have actually allocated elements for. And the other one, which are not seen, are actually not being allocated. As you bring those, as you scroll and you move those elements in, we change what the data grid shows. We have a feature called container resizing, where we actually don't throw away the element, we just change the data underneath. So this is done for you by default. On ListBox and data grid, virtualization is turned on by default. But if you run your own, if you build your own item control or you do anything special to the ListBox, such as grouping and stuff, make sure you didn't disable this virtualization. Again, use tools. UiSpy is another good tool to see whether your virtualization is enabled or not. And again, SybulaSpy is another good tool. Let's talk about UI. It's another common mistake that people do sometimes is they do a lot of work on the UI thread. There's a lot going on already on the UI thread. There's a single UI thread for the browser and all the plugin as well as Silverlight. Silverlight does animations, layout, events, user input, as well as your application code run on the UI thread. So don't hog it, okay? Just do as little work as you need, and if you need to do additional work, offload it to another thread or use a dispatcher. I'm going to talk more about it. The other thread that's going on that we use in Silverlight, do any GPU work, and media decoding and final frame stitching. And again, to remember is if you do work on another thread, you have to do all the UI work. Any XAML access have to go back and done on the UI thread. So you need to kind of coordinate those threads. So some grounding operations interfere with everything, animation, input, layout, keeps them on another thread. So there are two methods that I'm going to talk about here. One is using the dispatcher and breaking long tasks into much smaller tasks using dispatcher.beginInvoke. It's a good method that you can use for certain scenarios. Another one that I'm going to quickly give a demo is how to use the background worker thread for long grounding and other blocking operations. The background worker thread have a great properties to handle progress reporting and cancellation, so it's really easy to use. So let me give you a quick demo what I mean by that. So I'm switching back to my CAD application. And this little checkbox that I've kind of disabled all the other controls that I have, and I'm going to pop up three other buttons here. So I have what this application now does is basically let me animate the CAD so we have something going on. So we have three buttons, and each one basically calculates a prime number. Prime number takes a long time. I'm calculating a sequence of prime numbers, and I'm displaying the results up on the right side. So the first button kind of blocks the UI. I do all the prime calculation and the UI thread. I want to see what impact here. So see, as I click on it, and I'm calculating the first prime number for up to 1,000,000, right? So you can see the animation stopped. Not only stopped, There's no. I cannot use the browser. For example, when I click on it, I cannot click on any of the menu. When I finish, then the browser kind of keep it in the queue and run those. But while I'm doing work, the entire experience in the browser is completely blocked. So you want to avoid this experience. The second button is basically running the same application, but now I use the dispatcher. So basically, calculate sequence of smaller number of prime numbers in one dispatcher call, and then I reschedule the work for another dispatcher work, another loop through the dispatcher. So now I can see that, okay, there is some activity, and I can use the mouse, but you see the animation is jittering. So the danger with using this approach is that you may end up doing more work than you expected, or there may be other work coming from unexpected area, either more heavy animations that may start, or some other user input. So the danger is that you don't know exactly how small is small. And you see, I can still interact. I can see. The other third method is using the background thread, which I mentioned earlier. So now everything is offloaded to another thread, and I using the some of the progress mechanism that the background worker thread provide me, I can easily send back those prime numbers back to my UI thread and update those results. Okay. Now let's go back to the PowerPoint. And this is my part of the presentation, and I'm going to bring now Mike, who's going to talk about tools and some of the memory profiling tools available for us.
Thank you, Joe. So hello, everyone. My name is Mike Cook. I'm a developer on the Silverlight Performance team. And today, I'm going to introduce you to some of the profiling tools that I use in my everyday job. When I'm analyzing the framework itself. But a lot of the things that you're going to see today are extremely useful for application developers as well. So I'm really excited to be sharing this with you. So the first thing that we're going to go over is sampled CPU profiling. This is extremely useful for finding hotspots in your applications. If you have a Silverlight application with a lot of client-intensive work that you're trying to offload to all the users that are using your app, this is a perfect way to sort of find out where the expensive parts of the calculations are and drill down into those so that you can optimize and make them as low overhead as possible. So I'm going to be actually demoing Visual Studio 2010 Premium today. Premium and Ultimate both come with the Visual Studio Profiler. And if you don't have the Premium or Ultimate version, then you can also use XPerf, and that's free. That comes as part of the Windows Performance Toolkit. So we're going to go straight into our first demo. And the first thing that you're going to want to do, Visual Studio doesn't actually come with first-class support built into the UI for Silverlight quite yet. So the first thing to do is bring up an administrative command prompt. And you're going to run vsperf clrmv/sample on. And that will enable sampled profiling in Visual Studio. And the next thing is to type vsperf cmd/start and pass sample as a parameter. This is basically saying that you're using sampled profiling versus instrumented. Sampled profiling collects statistical data about your application as it's executing, so you can see where time is weighted in the profile. Instrumented profiling, on the other hand, actually instruments every method enter and leave so that you can see exact call counts for each function. You won't get that in sampled profiling, but instrumented profiling is a much higher overhead way of profiling. So if you're looking for just simple optimization, sample profiling is the way to go. So I'm going to give my profile a name, so /output equals my profile. And then we're actually going to launch Internet Explorer. Internet Explorer is hosting our Silverlight application. So I'm going to point to Program Files, Internet Explorer, iExplorer. And as the argument, just pass the actual path to your Silverlight page. So I'm just going to copy the path to my current directory and then pass cat test page. And this is the demo that Joseph was running before with the UI thread blocking. And so basically, I'm going to show you how you can use the profiler today to figure out what's actually causing the UI thread to block when we click this calculate prime. And so, you know, you could put this on a background thread, but maybe that's not always an option. So this is actually going to show you how to find this in the code. So once you've collected the profile, just type vsperf cmd/shutdown. And this is going to shut down the profiling session and actually write the information out to a file. And then you just use devenv to actually open the profile. And this is where the interesting bit is. So once this loads up, you're going to see, first and foremost, a CPU graph. So this is CPU usage over time with utilization on the vertical axis and time on the horizontal. And if you scroll down a little bit, Visual Studio automatically finds what it thinks the hot path is. So if you look, this is just a call stack coming down, and with 87% of the inclusive time is being spent in main page calc prime normal button click. So this correlates to what we were seeing on screen, right? When I click on that calculate button, the cat stopped animating, and so we knew that something expensive was going on. And we can actually go one further than that. If you click on this call stack frame, you'll actually see the source code that you've written, and it highlights the source code that's most expensive. So you can see this math square root in the condition of the for loop is 65% of the time being spent here. And you can scroll down a little bit more and see another 7% being spent calculating this modulo, and then setting this dependency property is another 14%. So I'm just trying to show you that it's really, really easy. You know, we did this in 3 minutes on stage, taking an actual real world problem, taking a profile, and we actually went straight to the line of code that's causing the problem. So you get, you know, instant feedback, and this shows you where you should go to optimize your code, basically. So now back to the slides. So that was just a short bit about optimizing CPU usage. Now we're going to go into memory. Joseph talked about some of these things before, but in reference to runtime performance, a lot of the same things that will affect your runtime performance will also affect memory usage. So lowering your element count is really, really important. The larger your visual tree is, the more work that Silverlight has to do to maintain its retained visual tree, right? So lowering your element count will basically lead to lower memory usage by causality. If you have user controls or templates that are used all over, say you have a big list box or a big data grid that has a template all over the place, simplifying that user control, you know, has the effect of number of elements times n across the entire page. So you basically want to minimize the incremental cost of each of the elements that you're putting on screen. Virtualize large lists. This one should be kind of obvious. If you have a list box with 10,000 elements in it, you don't want to pay the cost in memory 10,000 elements. So if you virtualize that, you're only going to pay the cost for the 10 or whatever that you can see in the actual box itself. And lastly, if you have elements on screen, or actually, sorry, not on screen, you really want to remove those from the visual tree rather than hiding or collapsing them. A problem that I see a lot when I'm analyzing customer applications is maybe they'll have a login screen that pops up the first time that they use the app, and they want to create a good impression, so the login screen's really, you know, flashy and has animations and lots of elements. And then the first thing they do is hide that. Well, that means that throughout the rest of the usage of the application, there are, you know, maybe 1,000 elements hanging around in the background that aren't adding any visual impact to the app, but you're paying for all of that all along. So it's really important to try and get those removed when you can. Silverlight Spy, again, is a great tool for checking out your element count. You can use it in real time to attach to your app and go through and walk through the visual tree and see what's still alive. So when you free those things, the garbage collector can actually free them from memory. Lastly, high-res images are a big problem. Silverlight doesn't have the notion of decode pixel width and height that you might be familiar with WPF. What this means is if you're downloading a 10-megapixel image and then scaling it down to 100 by 100, you may be paying, you know, many, many megabytes of working for, you know, this much visual impact. So there are workarounds available, and you can find them on our Silverlight Performance blog. There will be a link to that blog in our resources section. But basically, this is something to be aware of, especially if you're creating like a social networking app and you're displaying lots of little tiles for user profiles or something like that. This is constantly the source of, you know, tens or 20, like 30 or 40 megabytes of working scene. So pay close attention. But tips aren't always enough. I'm here to talk about tools today. Analysis is really important. So let's move on. So this is a tool called VM Map. It comes from sysinternals. You can search for this on Bing, and you'll find it on the TechNet site. It's a free download. It's a small, simple tool. And basically what this does is gives you a breakdown of your application's memory footprint. And so this is actually just a snapshot of the cat application that Joseph was showing. And the important part that I want you to look at is the private working set column. It's third from the right. And basically I have it sorted in descending order by category. So you can see that the application's using 19 megabytes total, and about 9 of that is native heap memory. About 5 of that is private data, which is actually direct calls to virtual alloc. And then only a megabyte is coming from managed heap. So this is usually the first thing that I look at to decide if I'm going to look at native memory or manage memory. And then this is sort of my 30,000-foot view. I use this to decide which other tools I'm going to use to really find the specific information that I need to make optimization. So tracking managed memory is probably most interesting to the developers out there. Silverlight is a managed programming model, so your objects that you're keeping alive are going to have a big effect on the application working set. The Windebug debugger is free on TechNet site as well, and you can use the Son of Strike extension to analyze the managed memory of your application. So the first line that you're going to see, it looks big enough to read, you'll need to do a dot load on the SOS DLL, and what this is just load the debugger extension. And when you do this, it makes available a bunch of commands so that you can do a very detailed analysis of your managed working set. So this first slide is an example of dump heap-stat. And what this does is just give you an overall dump of your all the managed objects on your heap at a given time. So you can see this has 24,000 objects, and the biggest allocation is coming from strings. So, this is sort of the first step just to see what are the most expensive types of objects that I'm using. Once you've decided that, you can use another command, dump heap-type. And what this does is allow you to filter by style, filter by type. So in this example, I filtered by system.windows.style. So I'm seeing all of the managed instances of style that are alive in the application. And you can see in this instance there were 21, and they were only 924 bytes. So, pick the largest allocation in your application and then try and go for that one first. And it's sort of order of whatever's most interesting. And lastly, once you've decided on the object that you want to track down, use the gc root command. You can get the address from the previous slide. The leftmost column is actually the address of each individual object. If you pass that into gc root, you'll actually get gc root paths for that particular object. So you can see, going down from the top, the main page is holding on to a combo box, which is holding on to a border, to a grid, to yada, yada, yada. This basically gives you a way of finding exactly why that object is alive. And if you break those references, then the collector will come along and clean them. And lastly, third-party profilers, I'd really encourage you to look at them. Windebug is powerful, but it's a little bit clumsy to use since you're going through a command line interface the whole time. If you use a third-party profiler like either of these, you can get things like reference graphs that are a little bit easier to understand for some people. And they just provide a lot more friendly sort of analysis. I use both of these, and they're great. So. And lastly, native memory is really important to be aware of. I know Silverlight is a managed API, but the Silverlight core itself is native. And so all of the things that you do in managed code have an effect on the native memory footprint. So sometimes it's useful to be able to actually go in and see what Silverlight's doing on your behalf. And this sort of information is actually publicly available. The Windows kernel itself is instrumented with heap ETW markers. ETW is an event tracing infrastructure. And as long as you have these markers turned on, you can collect call stack information for every native allocation that happens. So this is an example of a native trace using XPerf itself. And the process of using XPerf to collect these traces is a little bit complicated, but I've written a script that's posted on the Silverlight Performance blog that makes this a single line command. You just call heap monitor -p and pass in the process ID of your process, and it'll automatically collect these dumps for you. And there are very detailed instructions on the blog, so I'm just showing a screenshot today, but there are detailed instructions that you can go to there. And that's all I have to talk about today. I encourage you to go to check out these resources and contact us if you have any questions just through the blog. But thank you very much.